What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we're going to be wrapping up the preseason. I'm going to be talking, obviously, about the unfortunate fall that Bob Carrington had and kind of talking about the injury and what I saw, and maybe some positive news actually coming out of that for Wizards fans. Other injury news with AJ Johnson, Cam Whitmore, Bilal Coulibaly as well. I want to talk about Keyshawn George and Alex Saar and the strong preseason they had even against Detroit. So I want to give my takeaways on the Detroit game, but also as the preseason as a whole and kind of some positives, some negatives that I took from the three games. Then also want to get in a little bit into the roster. And we're going to have a full season preview coming out soon, but I've seen some roster cuts and waves coming out recently and as NBA teams start to crack down the roster to get to 15 by opening night. So I wanted to get a little bit ahead of that and kind of talk about who I think can get that final spot between, three guys that I see on the realistic roster bubble. So without further ado, I want to obviously start with the injury news. If you were watching Thursday Night Football and you decided not to watch the Wizards game, actually would have probably caught it because it was early on in the first period for a 7 o'clock start. Sorry, the first quarter of a 7 o'clock start. But Pistons are running in transition. Bob Carrington running back. He leaps up to try to deflect the ball, doesn't get it. Lands awkwardly on his right leg and kind of extends it a little bit. And as he's falling back to brace his fall, his left leg looked like it got caught underneath him. And he kind of rolled back with his momentum on that side. So really an awkward fall, awkward position for that knee to kind of be trapped and caught in. And he knew it right away. I mean, he stayed on the floor for, extended period of time, grabbed that left knee. That's never a good sign, and especially when the trainers rush out and the whole team was surrounding him, as Monumental went to commercial. It wasn't a scene that Wizards fans realistically ever want to see for any player, let alone their young starting point guard. So that was obviously not great. And then they come back from commercial, and he's getting, helped into the locker room by Anthony Gill and Dylan Jones. He can't really put any weight on that left leg, and clearly that's an issue, and it's not a good sight for Wizards fans. And you thought, worst comes to worst, it's a knee injury. It's maybe an ACL, and maybe he's out for the season. That's based on the whole scene. That's what you start to think as a fan. You think the worst, but it seems like the news since then has been good. Shortly after that, the Wizards ruled him out, but they said it was because of left knee soreness. So clearly, nothing it seems to do with ligaments, which I think was the biggest thing on Wizards fans' minds. It's not even a left knee contusion or a bone bruise or a hyperextension. It's just sore left knee. So maybe he just it was an awkward land. It's a little sore for now, but based on the whole scene, I think that's actually pretty good injury news. And then later in the game, at the end, they flashed a Bub in street clothes on the bench. He was chopping up with everyone. He was smiling and laughing, look engaged, look like he was all right in good spirits. So again, I don't think he'd be like that. And I don't know anything about the situation, but I don't think he'd be like that if it was a long-term major injury. Even if he was out a couple weeks, I don't know if he'd be like that, laughing and joking on the bench. So hopefully, it's just a hey, you have 5 more days to get everything right, and on Wednesday for the opener, hopefully he's ready to play in Milwaukee. I don't know if that's the case, but that would certainly be ideal. But based on what the whole scene was at the beginning of the injury, I think it's definitely an ideal outcome for it to just be a sore left knee. Other injury updates: some Wizards beat reporters mentioned that Cam Whitmore didn't play because of a tweaked ankle. They said he tweaked it against the Knicks and didn't play because of a, an abundance of caution. I think this if Milwaukee, game was tonight or tomorrow to open the season, I think Whitmore would have played based on the reporting. So nothing to really be too concerned about, but he did not play against Detroit. Neither did AJ Johnson. Didn't play the entire preseason. It's a calf injury that Keith talked about at Media Day. It didn't seem like he had a similar timeline to Bilal, where he'd be out the entire preseason. I thought he might return during training camp, and he clearly, didn't play any preseason. So I don't think that's too much to be concerned about. I don't think he'd be in the rotation anyway, even if he was healthy. But he hasn't played. He didn't play against Detroit, and then Bilal obviously didn't play. He'll miss the first 2 weeks of the season probably, and then be back. So those are just kind of some brief injury updates before we start to get into some of my analysis on the Detroit game. And where I want to start with that analysis is Keyshawn George. I mean, if you watch the game, you're not surprised that I'm starting with him. If you watch the game against Toronto, you're equally unsurprised, even if you watched him play against the Knicks. He has been the team's best player. I mean, maybe apart from McCollum, but he also didn't play in all three games. Keyshawn's been phenomenal. I tweeted it out that Keyshawn's been phenomenal because that's the word to describe it. On both ends, too. We know what he can do on defense. Against Cade Cunningham, I think Cade had 16 and 12. Like, he got his, but Keyshawn made it very difficult for him to get those points. If you watched the game, you saw that he made it difficult. I think George had a steal. He had a block. He had four blocks and a steal in the first game against Toronto. But the offense is kind of what was cooking against Detroit. Finished with 20 points, which was a team high, on 8 of 11 from the field. Very efficient at that. I think he had, was it six boards, two assists? So, I mean, can't say enough good things, honestly, about his performance. I mean, he had one play in particular where he kind of showcased his ability to take guys off the dribble now. He was at the top of the key, in and out dribble, got from his left to his right, gets on the right elbow, pushes into the guy with his offhand to create space, just completely bodies him. He goes flying. George settles on the elbow, sinks a nice mid-range jumper for two. He had two other plays where he got, I think he had two and ones where he finished through contact, was just bullying guys, being so aggressive. He was playing so under control, knowing the angles, knowing when to give a little bit of a push off and not get called for it. Just kind of played comfortable, played like a seasoned vet. And it was great to see because you had seen how great he was on defense, but to see him, settling into this role in offense where it's like, okay, I'll say this. When the Wizards drafted Keyshawn George, I'm not going to come out here and pretend that I knew he would be at this level this early on. I'm not going to say that because I didn't. But I loved the pick at the time. You can check the pod that I recorded after that draft in 2024. And I liked it because teams tend in the mid to late first round and the second round to reach. They tend to reach for high ceiling guys. And they don't focus too much on the high floor guys. And Keyshawn was a 3-and-D guy through and through. He was a guy that you knew would give you good defense, good size on the wing, good length. And you knew that he had the potential to be a decent offensive player to add a 3-point shot. And so he was always going to be a solid player. But for him to come in here, he's a lock to start on opening night. He has earned that role. Honestly, if Bilal was healthy, I'd still side with starting Keyshawn George because he's been that good, that consistent on both ends. But for him to be able to catch and shoot like we expected, to continue to take on the best defensive assignment on the other end, but now he can handle the offense. Like he can, I'm comfortable with Keyshawn handling the rock and running the offense and playing point guard. He showed a little bit against Detroit when Bub went down, and I've seen it in other games, especially throughout Summer League as well. He can put the ball on the deck, like I just mentioned. I took you through that play. He can get to the rim and finish through contact. He can score in the mid-range. He can score from three. He can score in the paint. Like, this is a guy that has molded himself into someone that can do a lot. I don't want to say do it all yet because he's not there. I don't want to overstep or overhype what he's done to this point. But it does deserve praise how far he's come in such a short amount of time. So I can't say enough good things about his preseason against his game against Detroit, about his game against Detroit. Just really looking forward to kind of what he can do, how he can kind of put it all together this season. Looking way, way more comfortable, possibly in a starting role, I would expect for most of the season too. That kind of brings me to some of the other pros of the game, which have to do with, again, the centers. I feel like I keep coming back to the centers, but they keep playing well. I mean, Alex Saar. Again, I can't say enough about the rebounding, the aggression, the physicality he's playing with, the confidence he's playing with. But I'm going to harp on the rebounding for a second because he's averaged 8.5 rebounds in what, 5 quarters? That's 17 rebounds in realistically 5 quarters. He played just one half in the first game, didn't play the fourth quarter against Detroit. That's 17 boards. And if you're going through a full sample size of, let's say he's playing all 4 quarters and he's probably playing 35 minutes a night. He's around definitely double digits, but he's probably around 10, 12, 13 rebounds in each of these contests, if that's the way that he wants to play. And that's what we want from Saar. I think he averaged 12 and 7 last year. He can do a lot more as a 7-foot starting center in this league. I'm sorry, but he can. I have high expectations for him because I think he can be great. And to see that aggression, and it's on the offensive glass, it's not just cleaning the defensive glass, it's keeping possessions alive for his teammates. In that first game against the or against the Pistons, Sarr had three offensive rebounds. Again, that's awesome. You love to see that. And then you got a guy like Marvin Bagley, who against the Pistons had another solid game, 4 of 8 from the field, 9 points, 5 boards. Follows up his 18-point, 11-rebound performance against the Knicks, and also played well against the Raptors. He's a guy that I really like when he gets active on the offensive glass and really goes. He had 3 offensive rebounds against Detroit. If you look at his showing against the Knicks, he had 5 offensive rebounds. Did he do anything against? He had 4 offensive rebounds against Toronto. There's like 3 offensive rebounds a game from your backup center. He's keeping possessions alive. He's cleaning the defensive glass. He's scoring efficiently. He's been awesome. Him and Sarr have been really impressive. And for a team that was really ridiculed for their lack of center depth, including Sarr for that matter, they played really well. And it's preseason. I know that. I know it's preseason. I know Sarr didn't play a lot. But when they both played, they were great. And so I have to talk about it. I think they realistically could be a nice little 1-2 punch in the backcourt. Sorry, in the front court for the Wiz this season. You got Vucevic, who I don't know will play too much. Against the Pistons, he played 8 minutes, made one of his 2 3-pointers at 7 points. Again, I really like the offense he's shown in the preseason. The defense still has a ways to go, but seems like he'll be more so of a go-go guy in the beginning, on that two-way deal than a backup center to Sarr. I think that's Bagley's role. But I've really liked the what I've seen from Bagley and Sarr, specifically the rebounding from Sarr and the efficiency from Bagley. Apart from that, some other pros. I talked about George, talked about Sarr and Bagley. As far as rim protection, I've also liked he had an emphatic block against Isaiah Stewart. It was been pretty easy. I don't know why Stewart shot it, but Sarr swatted it. And then Corey Kispert. I think in the first half against Detroit, he had 9.6 boards. Provided a nice offensive spark to get the team, I think, on a 10-0 run and tie the game. Second half, wasn't that great. He ended with 1 of 6 from the from 3, 5 of 13 from the field with 13 points, I think. So again, apart from that, he didn't do too much. Definitely needs to be way more efficient, especially from three. But he did have a spark offensively. He did score a lot off the bench. The team did need that, and so hopefully he can do that in the regular season. But obviously at a way more consistent clip. Some cons, some things I didn't like from Detroit. Sarr's pick and roll defense, I think, could be a lot better. The teams as a whole, but I think Sarr can be in way better position. Make better reads, when put in pick and roll actions. The half court offense is going to be a struggle this year. With Bub, without Bub, I think they're going to find it pretty difficult. I mean, they scored less than 100 points against the Pistons. Again, I think they're going to find it hard to score in the half court. You obviously have Middleton and McCollum that can get their own points, make tough shots. But I think that might be a struggle. They're going to try to run. And of course, that makes everything easier if you can just get out and run and get an easy layup. They're going to try their best, I think, to do that, to avoid as many half-court possessions as possible. But from three games, I mean, against the Knicks, they scored 120, but they also shut the lights off the ball. So I think that's something that I noticed could be a struggle. Turnovers as well, it seems like could become, pretty difficult for this team to avoid. Again, 20 turnovers against Detroit if we go over to the New York game. I don't know if they still struggle. I mean, 15 against the Knicks. If you go to the Toronto game, we pull up the stats from that real quick. Total turnovers there, I believe they had 19. Yeah. So, I mean, they're averaging like 16, 17 turnovers a game in 3 preseason games. That's pretty bad. Bub Carrington obviously needing to mature as the true point guard and running the offense. That certainly is probably a part of that. But they do need to control the ball. They need to take care of the ball better. That's another thing that I noticed. And then the last thing is Trey Johnson, Will Riley didn't play particularly well against Detroit. And I am remiss to say that. Like, I don't really want to say they didn't play well. Their shots didn't fall. Will Riley didn't take enough shots for my liking, and Trey did take enough shots. He took some good shots. They just didn't fall. Trey was 1 of 8 from the field. Didn't make any of his 3-pointers. Had 6 boards, which I liked. And I like the shots honestly that he created. He took some open looks. There were a couple of turnaround mid-range jumpers that I thought he made good moves on, just didn't fall. But there were a couple of times where he tried to do like an up and under on Tobias Harris that probably would have worked against SEC competition in at Texas, but is not going to work on a 15-year veteran and like Harris. He got his shot blocked. It's learning curves like that I think, you don't want to overreact to. But again, if I'm going to come on here and I'm going to talk so highly about Will Riley and Trey Johnson in the previous games and they played pretty well, I can't just come on here and not talk about when they don't play well. That's disingenuous. And so I think, and for Riley, it's not that he played poorly. He played 21 minutes. He just took seven less shots than he took against New York. 4 points, 1 of 4 from the field, didn't attempt a three. I like to see him, if he's playing that much, be more aggressive. I do think, well, Riley did give Ryan Keefe something to think about. Like, I think he was like, you know what, maybe I'm not part of the rotation early on. But I mean, look how good I played against the Knicks. And again, it was the Knicks' third and fourth string guys. Like, we do have to factor that in. But he was great against them. So we'll see. But that was kind of one other thing that I didn't love against Detroit. Moving forward to the overall takeaways from the preseason. I kind of gave my individual takeaways from the Detroit game. Overall, I mean, reading into the tea leaves, it seems like the starting five, assuming Bob Carrington is healthy on opening night, which is Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time in Milwaukee against the Bucks. Starting lineup should be Carrington, McCollum, George, Middleton, and Sarr. Those are the five that started the first game and the third game of preseason. Didn't start the second game because Sarr, Middleton, and McCollum were all out due to rest on the second of a back-to-back. So I would assume those five start. And then reading again through the tea leaves, backing them up, in that rotation will be Trey Johnson, Cam Whitmore, Corey Kispert, Marvin Bagley III. Maybe Keefe goes 10 deep and decides, you know what, let me give like Champagne some run. I'd find it really hard to believe he's that confident in Will Riley, even after that solid game against New York this early on. I honestly think that they probably have a different type of plan to develop Riley at a slower pace. Maybe you see him early in the season with the G League and then he comes back up and plays with the NBA team. I'm not sure. What I do know is I think Keefe likes shorter rotations, eight, nine guys. Maybe Champagne is that 10th guy, and it sucks because I like him and I think he realistically should be playing on this team. But they have good, decent depth, and I think that's a good thing to have. I'm not going to be upset about that. I don't think they should be upset about that. So I think that'll be your starters and that'll be your rotation early in the season. When Bilal comes back, things get difficult, and that's why Keefe is getting paid to be a coach. That's why Dawkins is getting paid to be a GM to make decisions like that, to where Bilal comes back, like, is he going to start? And if he doesn't, he's coming off the bench. Who is out of that rotation? Are you going to take Kispert and just not play him? Or are you not going to play Cam Whitmore? I mean, it's a lot of trial and error. Obviously, it depends on who plays well to begin the season before he comes back. But at least on opening night in Milwaukee, I think that's the starters, and I think that's the rotation. That kind of brings me to another thing that I kind of wanted to touch on, and that is the final roster. For a refresher, if you don't know, by opening night, which I think is the 21st for most teams, and I'm not sure it's opening night for your team or for the NBA as a whole. It doesn't matter too much because it's the 21st versus the 22nd. But basically, the next couple of days, teams need to get their roster down to 15 standard NBA contracts at max and a maximum of 3 2-ways. The Wizards have their 2-ways. It's Sharif Cooper, it's Tristan Vukcevic, and it is Jameer Watkins. So those are settled. Where they need to do some work is the standard roster. They have 16 standard contracts, and they have 15 standard contract spots by opening night. I would say 12 of them are pretty much locks, with the exception of Justin Champagne, who we've been over this countless times on this podcast. If the Wizards cut him because he's a non-guaranteed deal, he's making like 1.8 for the next like year or two, maybe even three. There might be an option in there, but that's an unbelievable contract for a guy that can give you the production, the minutes at multiple positions, the two-way play, the rebounding, the consistency that he gives you. To cut him for some of the guys that I'm about to name on the bubble, just because he's non-guaranteed, especially when you have cap space under the aprons, would blow my mind. I think it'd be such a short-sighted decision. And it's so short-sighted that I don't even want to consider it because I trust Dawkins and Winger, and I don't think they make a move like that. So I think 12 of the roster spots are locked. Realistically, 13, I guess, if you're including Champagne. And that leaves you to the final three guys, which would be Dylan Jones, It would be Anthony Gill, and it would be Malachi Branham. There's two spots for those three, and I think if there's one that I can take out and say they're pretty much safe, it would be Anthony Gill. The only reason I think they might cut Gill is because we saw this with Taj Gibson, where they brought him in, they waived him, brought him back for training camp, basically were like, here's your veteran minimum. Thanks for your service in training camp and being a mentor and for all years in the league and for being with us last year. We're going to waive you because we want to keep some of the young, the guys like Patrick Baldwin Jr., Johnny Davis, and all of them on our roster at that point. Ryan Rollins, too, I think, was still on the team. And so maybe that's the case. I'm like, thank you for your service. We're going to pay you the vet minimum, but you're just not going to be a part of the roster. The only way I can see them doing that is because they really like Branham and Dylan Jones that much to where they're sitting there and saying, we can't cut him. We can't keep this, 30-plus-year-old Anthony Gill on the roster who won't play at all for us just because we want him as a mentor. That's the only thing that I think could outweigh it. And I don't think that's going to be the case because I've mentioned this before. I think 10 times out of 10, Dylan Jones and Malachi Branham give Anthony Gill the business one-on-one. I think they do. And if you're looking for a production and someone that can actually help your team win ball games, you're taking them over Gill all the time. But this team is in a different spot. They're not looking to win. They're honestly just looking to improve, develop and lose games. Like that's part of the plan. And so I think a mentor like Gill that can teach these young guys how to be professionals, how to be veterans, how to go about their business, both on and off the court, to mentor them. I think that's way more valuable to this organization now than Malachi Branham or Dylan Jones will be because they're just better basketball players. And so, again, I don't think that would be the case, but that's just a thought. What I do think will happen is Gill will stay as that 14th guy, and it's down to Dylan Jones and Branham. And again, I should say I have no sources, no information on this. This is just an outside perspective of me looking at it with a logical lens and saying these guys were traded for by Will Dawkins. Sure, they weren't drafted by him. They weren't signed by him. And then you got to look at how were they acquired? Were they acquired because he realistically wanted their talents above all else? I would side with no. They got a second round pick in return for absorbing salary. That's what happened realistically in these moves. And so that I think was the kicker, is the second round picks in both those trades. Those guys were just thrown in by the teams they did the transaction with. Because the Wizards had the space to take on their contracts. They already bought out Blake Wesley, who was only taken three picks after Branham in 2022. So I don't think they are that connected with Branham, and I don't think they're that connected with Jones either. He was acquired because the Thunder attached a second-round pick to basically dump his salary because they wanted to just waive Colby Jones, and they didn't want the extra salary that I think Jones is just guaranteed, Dylan Jones is just guaranteed this year. And so that was just a move to say, hey, take on the other year through this year of his contract, we'll attach a second. That's why they took him. And so I think for both of them, they're in the same boat. And that's why I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, oh, it's going to be Dylan Jones that gets cut or it's going to be Branham that gets cut. I don't know. And I'm not going to sit here and guess. That's not what I'm going to do. My guess is that it will be one of those two. My educational guess is that it'll be Dylan Jones or Branham that gets cut. I don't know which one. But I don't think it'll be Gill. I think Gill makes it. I think the other 13 make it. And I think that's just a decision the Wizards have to weigh is which of those two do we like? And if you look at their preseason, they both played an okay amount. I mean, Jones played in all three games, and in the he played 20 minutes one game that I think against the Knicks that Branham didn't play in. If I can, I'll pull up the box score for the Knicks game, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, Branham was a DNP against the Knicks, whereas Jones played 20 minutes. And he wasn't, I mean, he had 4 points plus two. They were both really good against the Raptors. They played, I think, 7 minutes, were both a plus 13. So that was a nice showing for both of them. But I guess it just comes down to, like, what did Brian Keefe and Will Dawkins and Michael Winger, what did they see in training camp from them? What do they know and like about them? And what do they see in the limited preseason action for them to say, you know what, this guy's better than this one, we want to keep him. That's what's going to go into that decision. We'll see. I think at any point you could get the notification that the Wizards are waiving one of the two. If it's someone other than those two, and honestly, even if that's the case and it's not Gill, that's the other one, then I would be I'd be very surprised. Like, I don't even know who you can point to on this roster to say would get waived. I think all signs point to one of them too, and so I think it'll be one of them too. I don't know which one, but I do think one of them will get waived. And that's kind of thing I got to everything. I talked about the injuries. I talked about my Detroit takeaways. I talked about my preseason takeaways. I talked about the final roster. So I'm gonna be back on Monday, I believe, to do a full season preview. Hopefully that's out Monday morning. And so you have Monday, you have Tuesday, even all day Wednesday realistically to listen to it before the Wizards kick off the 2025-26 season at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday, October 22nd, against the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee. It's a tough matchup. Like, Giannis just dominates the Wizards. I wouldn't be surprised if he had like a 30-point triple double. Miles Turner, new buck, is a Wizard killer. You obviously have them going against a former familiar face in Kyle Kuzma. Ryan Rollins too, I think, will actually be a part of their rotation. He had a good season last year. He's a former Wizard. They have a weird team, but obviously a team that's 10 times better than the Wizards. So hopefully the Wizards compete and we see something else. Middleton returning to Milwaukee. Actually, I think this is the first time because I think they only played the Wizards in Washington. So it would be the first time Middleton was there since the trade. I would assume he gets a tribute because he won a ring with them, and he was realistically the reason that they beat Brooklyn and that they were there, apart from, you know, obviously Giannis and everyone else. So I'm sure that'd be a touching moment for Chris, but nonetheless, we'll see how the Wizards play. I'm excited for the season, starting to get into it. Preseason's kind of behind us. Hopefully Bob is okay by that night, and the Wizards can kind of be pretty much fully healthy, minus Bilal and AJ, by the start of the season. So again, that's gonna do it for this episode. I'll be back on Monday to talk about the season in total, give my prediction, record prediction. You know, like last year, I predicted they win 18 games and they won 18, but we don't have to talk about that too much. But I'll be back to give that prediction, kind of give you a rundown of everything you need to know about the Wizards entering the 25-26 season. That's gonna do it for this episode. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. I'll see you soon. Go Wiz.